I'm out of hair gel. That's why I look rugged.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah,
your hair looks great.
Definitely noticed.
Yeah.
They are coming after Big Balls, and we are not standing for it. The war is on, Joe. The war is on. Trump has issued an executive order going after the nonprofit supported by USAID, and the media is doxing DOGE employees.
That's what we talk about. They should. I can't believe they would ever do that.
How could they come after Big Balls,
dude?
He is the pillar of our society.
You know what? We need to start a campaign. Dicks out for Big Balls.
Dicks out for Big Balls. Exactly.
Maybe next, Hairy Nuts.
Now, for people that don't understand the reference to Big Balls, can you explain really quickly who Big Balls is?
He's the commander-in-chief of the United States government now, apparently. That's what I'm reading.
He's in charge out all the bad people out of the government.
Big Balls is a pseudonym that one of the DOGE employees went by on the internet in the past that has been dragged to the surface by like CNN or whatever, and they are just out of their minds about this fact.
I love it. I mean, it's like this clash of internet culture and like puritanical like corporate culture.
Yeah,
that is amazing. It's just so beautiful. It's just watching like, can you believe this 18-year-old called himself Big Balls on the internet?
Dude, the Chiron when they're talking about this on CNN is just absolutely
so
priceless.
Funny.
We'll have
so
to have good. Bennett drop it over the screen right now. Okay. So what's going on with this stuff? What's the deal?
Well, welcome back to the Human Reaction Podcast.
Oh.
Yeah, Joe's a little out of sorts. We had some technical issues. It's been about 2 hours to get this whole thing off the ground because Kyle couldn't make the trek into Bozeman today.
Kyle can't drive in the snow, apparently.
It's been a sheer whiteout outside. So we decided to test our remote capabilities, and Joe's not feeling it right now.
Look, a lot of things have changed between the old studio and the new studio, and I just was not prepared for this today. I was as unprepared for this remote as Kyle was to drive in the snow in his two-wheel drive Chevy sedan.
Yeah. You would think a Canadian could drive in the snow, though. I'm judging a little bit.
You would.
It's a long trek in from where I'm at right now. It would be a mess. Like 2 days ago, I came within inches of somebody crashing into me, and I'm just like, I'm not going. It's even worse conditions now. It was white out this entire morning.
Literally
just starting to clear up.
Every Friday, I feel like we have a text from Kyle. Anytime it snows, like I'm on the highway going 0 miles an hour. I almost just died.
Because there's like 12 cars in the ditch. I remember last year coming in, it was Mad Max one time where I had two trucks in front of me just spin out and crash into each other right in front of me. And like, I was just like skidding in, trying to like weave my way through, and I barely weaved in. And as they both go flying into the ditch, and then I came in and I was just like, guys, I almost died out there. And they're like, yeah, whatever.
Not a lot of sympathy.
You need a dash cam so you can prove all these claims that you're making, because I just don't know that I buy it.
Just the other day, you told me, you're like, oh, I had to come in for the podcast from out there, and I finally understand what you have to deal with. It's like literally every single time. It's like massive snowstorm right before we record.
It's true. It's as if the geo weather modification people don't want this podcast to happen.
That's what it is.
That's what it is. Okay. I'm going to do it.
Don't get in on trying to cut that funding to whatever agency is controlling the weather.
They were looking into NOAA last I checked, and I was like, okay. Uh-oh. Let's see about it. Anyways, I'm going to do the intro. Welcome back to Human Reaction. We're so glad to have you. Please smash the like button and drop us a comment. Is NOAA manufacturing storms that are trying to keep us from recording this show?
Yeah, right. I'm sure that's what they're going to talk about.
also, in the theme of our show today, I have a meme that I pulled from the Discord, and I think it encapsulates exactly what we're talking about. We have a guy at a party standing off to the side wearing a white Dudes for Harris hat saying, nobody voted for this. And everybody's dancing, having the time of their lives, saying, this has been the best month of my life. LOL, we did it. Slash it.
Yes, we did vote for this.
Mm-hmm.
I also just pulled a tweet that Elon Musk just tweeted. I love Donald Trump as much as a straight man can love another man.
Greg says, if you love him so much, why don't you marry him?
Marry him.
Good one, Greg.
Thanks, Greg.
If you are a small business owner looking for exponential growth, you have to connect with Adam Thune at Intellectual Patriots. He will revolutionize your business game and help you get to the next level. Adam can streamline your business practices and advertising strategies to improve your bottom line. His expertise in data engineering means he can build you the systems you need to collect and analyze market data. His mission is to provide you with invaluable insights to fuel your success. From grant writing and business proposals to digital systems integrations, even AI management, Intellectual Patriots is a one-stop shop for cutting-edge solutions. Don't wait another second. Visit intelpatriots.com to learn more. That's I-N-T-E-L patriots.com. This episode is brought to you by Revved Up Promo, the official apparel partner of Human Reaction. Revved Up is a premier full-service shop specializing in laser engraving, screen printing, and embroidery. Not only are they now making all of our apparel right down the road from us, they can do the same for your brand and ship it to you anywhere in the world. Revved Up helps you navigate the extensive universe of merch options and uses state-of-the-art techniques to showcase your brand in its very best light. So if you want to support our show and our generous sponsor, you can now do so by buying our merch and by turning to Revved Up Promo for your own custom apparel needs. Reach them at RevvedUpPromo.com. That's with two V's and two P's, or just check the show notes for a link.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. So the first story we got is that they have a new executive order requiring NGOs taking federal funds to require an audit, which is very interesting, given, like we talked about last time, and this is how the scheme works. And just to, in case you missed the last stirring episode of Joe and I's very intimate conversation on these things.
I was like this close.
Yeah. the government comes to your house with a gun and takes your money. And then they give it to USAID through the State Department. USAID then sends the money to a series of NGOs, of which we're going to dive a little deeper into kind of their activities. And then those NGOs build capacity building for the State Department so that they can implement their foreign policy agenda using the whole of society model. Not just government, but rather all the other things in society, private businesses to non-governments, to charities, to labor unions, things like that. So this would mean digging into all those third order groups and what they are receiving from U.S. taxpayers and how they're implementing on the ground. So very interesting. Withdrawing the United States from and ending funding to certain United Nations organizations, reviewing United Nations support to all international organizations.
One more time, a little bit slower for the kids in the back.
Withdrawing the United States.
Withdrawing the United States from and ending funding to certain United Nations organizations and reviewing United States support to all international organizations. So basically they're just going thoroughly line by line through basically all of these United Nations organizations, ending our involvement in them and ending our funding of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And what that means essentially is that we're withdrawing from the UN Human Rights Council, but we're also adding a layer of scrutiny and kind of digging into the UN Educational, Scientific and Cultural Organization, as well as scrutinizing the UN Relief and Works Agency for Palestine refugees in the Near East. And part of, like, I read the whole executive order. Part of what's in here is that they're actually claiming that those organizations and those sub councils within the UN, have been infiltrated by terrorist organizations, one of which they named Hamas.
Okay.
That's
so
crazy.
Is this like a Israel thing? Is this like the Human Rights Council and these international bodies have consistently basically said that what's going on in Palestine is ethnic cleansing, that it is a
human rights violation,
or violations, things like that. Yeah. So is this just blowback on that? Is this more Adelson favors? Is that what we're looking at?
They put in here, I actually have it, some of the UN's agencies and bodies have drifted from the mission and instead act contrary to the interests of the United States while attacking our allies and propagating anti-Semitism.
I see. It's a unique hate that mutates.
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'm not a big fan of international bodies. I'm not sure if the liberal project here actually works the way people want it to. But at the same time, like, just doing this because we don't like what they have to say about the facts on the ground when it comes to Israel, Hamas is kind of a bummer.
Hey, I'm kind of down to pull out of these organizations regardless of the reason.
Yeah. Well, wait, okay. Why regardless of the reason?
Because they're bad. You said, I don't like these international bodies. Like, I'm kind of just down to begin pulling out and adding further scrutinization towards these organizations. One group might have one reason, one group might have another reason. Whatever.
I mean, that's a fair point. Like, I'm kind of with him on that. You know, it doesn't really necessarily matter the rationale. I think what matters more is how the investigations are carried out and what they're looking for.
Yeah.
Versus us being involved, and particularly us funding them. I mean, I think that's the bigger sticking point for a lot of America First people, is like, hey, should we be giving money to all these orgs that we're a part of? Do they really serve American interests necessarily?
Yeah, but if you define American interests as we need to create cover for the war crimes going on in Palestine, that's not the reason I would prefer to pull out.
Is that how you're seeing this being done?
Yeah.
Creating cover?
I mean, especially accusing them of being infiltrated by Hamas and being anti-Semitic. Like, come on. Like, that's not, give me some evidence of that.
Sure.
I'm very skeptical that they've been infiltrated by Hamas. But maybe there's something there, open to that. But I also am not a fan. I mean, there is an important part of this that has played an important role in actually cutting through the media blockade on Israel. Because if you can say an international body has investigated and has concluded these things, that is better than just saying, well, Al Jazeera said.
Right. No, that's fair.
You know what I mean? Especially for third parties in war, right? Because one of your things that you want to do in war is control the information flow so that the things you're doing that are bad aren't covered. Well, when you have pressure from international bodies to actually investigate, that's better than this. And I'm not saying I support these unqualified, but this is a terrible reason to get out of it, right?
I mean, I think it's certainly one-sided. But I think there are probably other reasons to get out of it, right?
We've already talked. What are the other reasons?
Well, I mean, why do we need to be involved is a question. Should we be funding it is another question, right? I mean, like a lot of these organizations, they this one in particular, I don't know. I'm more interested really in the auditing of all of the like NGOs that's happening and like all the stuff that's happening as a sort of a ripple out effect of this. But
right.
I mean, I just don't think we should be as involved in all these international organizations as we are.
Yeah, I mean, I'm open to that. I mean, there was oftentimes a big conspiracy theory that the United Nations is trying to become a world government or something like that. And that was a very common thing. And that stirred up a lot of anti-UN stuff. I don't think that was ever true. I think the UN was a way that we projected power using international organizations so it would look more legitimate to hide our empire.
You don't think the UN was trying to overtake national sovereignty?
No, I think actually the U.S. uses the UN to do that. I don't think the U.S. is losing their sovereignty to the UN because we fund it, military backbone of it, et cetera, et cetera.
That's fine. But I mean, you could say that about other international orgs like the WHO,
yeah.
Right? Like they're trying to pass treaties saying, oh, this is how all nations have to handle their pandemic response. Mm-hmm. I can't cite specific examples within the UN, but I'm sure there have been resolutions that have tried to override national law to, you know, let international law supersede that.
And that's like the classic anti neoliberal argument about these international bodies and how to do that. But on the other side of it is, you know, especially when it comes to war, how do you constrain states? What's the answer there? And it's just like, well, don't. Well, and I'm like, well, you know, some of the worst things we do is war and how to constrain them. I'm open to that. Like, yep. I because it's the worst thing we do.
Now, is this the same thing as the International Criminal Court?
No. So the human rights will recommend things for the International Criminal Court to take on.
Okay.
Yeah.
So without this body to recommend things, the ICC is just sitting there like not doing anything?
Well, no, it'll continue just without our participation.
Sure.
Yeah. Okay. And that doesn't mean we can't be brought in front of the criminal court.
So all the allegations and all of the investigations into war crimes on Israel's behalf in Gaza or against Israel in Gaza would continue because those weren't brought by the U.S. Of course, those are brought by like a whole host of different nations,
despite the U.S. Yeah,
yeah. So would this be a good thing potentially for the functioning of this body?
Don't know. I don't think so. I mean, because they were able to outvote the U.S. regardless of it, just means we will no longer be participating.
So I don't see a downside.
Yeah. Well, I mean, other than that, if these things fall apart, these are key parts to trying to inject actual what's going on the war for war grounds. If they fall apart in the U.S. pulling out of it, because these are creations of the U.S. No, after the World War II, we created all these institutions in order to try to legitimize our global empire.
So again, I'm not seeing a downside.
Well, I mean, Don't get me wrong. I'm not saying this is an unqualified bad. I'm just saying these motives for it show the cards on what the actual reasons are for it. And sure. I think those reasons are the worst reasons you could possibly do to it. Have better reasons.
Fair. You know? I don't necessarily.
I think it makes us look bad on the international scene too. Because if we're just covering for Israel's war crimes in Gaza, that sucks.
I agree.
Not good for us.
I agree.
So I'm not reading here, Kyle, and you prepped the notes today, so forgive me, buddy. What the NGO part of this is, like the audio.
So that's the next section of the document.
Oh, okay.
As we're going into funding. So like this executive order is actually two parts. One is the UN stuff, and then the other is putting forward a audit on all NGOs receiving United States funds or support, and it's to be conducted within 180 days. And it's noteworthy that on January 20th, so on Trump's inauguration, he signed an executive order putting a 90-day pause on this funding. But now this executive order is forcing an audit to be had.
Now I assume that the funds will be released within 90 days, at least to whatever organizations the U.S. deems to be qualified to receive those funds. Is that sort of how the pause on funding is going to go? They're gonna shut it down for 90 days, investigate like they've done with USAID, and figure out, okay, which ones of these are participating in ridiculous waste and fraud, and you know, shutter some of them, or in the case of USAID, you know, fire 95% of the employees, and then release funds again? Or is this audit going to be a prerequisite for the funding coming back into play?
I imagine it's a prerequisite for the funding coming back. It's supposed to be going, I believe it's said in the executive order, the audit is going to be supervised by the secretary in consultation with the UN ambassador, which is, I think, where the UN ties with the executive order comes into play here. I'm not sure on all the mechanics of how that's going to look. It's kind of vague, you know, it's just an executive order. It doesn't have all the, you know, all the mechanics tied in there. But it seems to be, from what's coming out from the Trump administration, is a lot of the focuses are coming in on international organizations that were giving support, but also a lot of focus on organizations that are meant to sway policy opinions, both foreign and domestically. That was a lot of the vibes I was getting from the administration, from people around there that were talking about the audits that were going on. But as far as I can tell, everything is just all organizations receiving funding. Like, it doesn't seem like it's just picking and choosing certain organizations. It's just kind of a blanket statement of all are requiring an audit.
Yeah, it's worded somewhat vaguely. I was kind of confused about whether or not it's just these UN international organizations, or if it actually applies to non-governmental organizations receiving funding.
All the talk I've been seeing on it has been that it's just NGOs across the board.
Interesting.
I mean, that seems great, because there's obviously a lot of rogue NGOs. I mean, some obviously operating down in the Darien Gap, facilitating the migrant crisis we've been experiencing. I mean, all over the world doing God knows what with our tax dollars, and we have no idea.
Yeah. Well, right. And it even said it's like ones that are getting federal funds, but also just like support. So I don't know what that means. So like if there's just like some sort of like diplomatic support that's going to these organizations, if that's being included in this, I'm not exactly sure. Mm-hmm. So I went into the AI and asked like what organizations might be, you know, part of this audit. And there was some names of organizations that I was kind of surprised to see that may be coming as part of the audit. Mm. You know, like even things like the Open Society Foundation and things like that. But yeah, I saw things like the National Endowment for Democracy, saw things like the HIAS, which is what you were referring to, Joe, which was they're one of the major groups that have been involved in the migrations across the Darien Gap, along with Catholic Charities USA, which is also another one that's very immigration focused. They were actually an object of contention in James O'Keefe's documentary on the immigration crisis.
Right.
They were somebody that came up in that quite a bit. Yeah, it'll be very curious to see what ends up happening here, because especially as we've been seeing all the USAID stuff going on, you know, Doge seems to be putting in some good work with his Elon's team of autists.
Really putting their balls on the line. You know?
Yeah. So some of these groups, National Endowment for Democracy, who are they and all that kind of stuff. So I wanted to dive into that just because we kind of penetrated last on Tuesday more into USAID and we kind of suggested these organizations, did dive deep into them. Their role in this is really important because they are closer to the boots on the ground, right? They're the next step before it gets to the local Verify Psy or Ukraine Inquirer or whatever the thing that they're creating on the ground. So part of the context here is after Carter, there was a major clampdown on CIA operations. By Reagan, a lot of these organizations are created, non-governmental organizations are created that then become the arms of USAID and of the interests of the CIA to the on-the-ground investments so that they can do the whole-of-society model. So, for example, National Endowment for Democracy was created in 1983. They were all made in 1983, at least these big major three, by Carl Gresham. He's under the Reagan administration. And its primary role, supposedly, is funds pro-democracy movement, NGOs, and opposition groups worldwide. So a couple of examples of that in the censorship industrial complex area. They funded the DFR lab with the Atlantic Council's Digital Forensics Lab. Atlantic Council, they are the major think tank for NATO. That's the way, easy way. So here, Atlantic Council, think tank for NATO. You hear Cato Institute, think tank for libertarians, right? Same sort of thing. They work with, and remember, Atlantic Council has six CIA, former CIA directors on their board. So they worked with them to work with Facebook and Twitter to flag foreign propaganda and misinformation. They worked with Graphica, identifying Russian influence, and largely ended up targeting, according to the reporting, of dissident voices opposing U.S. foreign policy. And last, and one of the interesting ones, they funded Bellingcat.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, UK-based open-source intelligence group backed by the NED. And obviously, they're known for pushing the blob take on foreign interventions in Syria, Russia, Ukraine. Yeah. So they funded all kinds of misinformation fact checkers. Their direct involvement in Ukraine was things like Stop Fake, which was a think tank that created Institute for Mass Information. And they all pressured, you know, tech institutions to deplatform pro-Russian narratives. They were involved in Belarus in 2020, along with some other ones that we'll get into. And of course, they were involved in China, Hong Kong. After the flip of Hong Kong to a Chinese province in order to push back, and that actually resulted in NED as well as NDI being kicked out of China functionally. They were operating in China before that.
Interesting.
So the other one of these is the IRI, which was founded in 1983 by John McCain.
It's the International Republican Institute,
yes,
right?
Founded by John McCain.
Basically the Republican arm of the sort of CIA think tank, the equivalent of the NED, but just on the right.
Yeah. They receive funds from the National Endowment for Democracy. It then goes to IRI in NDI.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. So they're the next tier down. So they're the fourth tier down. So U.S. tax dollars, State Department,
we need a flow
USAID.
Chart. We need a flow chart.
Put out the flow chart to minute. No, just kidding. And then going to things like the IRI. So they're founded by John McCain. Now, their primary role is, and their primary affiliation is with Republican Party and Republican Party interests. So they tend to engage in slightly different angles, but from an establishment Republican point of view. So you could look at, for example, in the CIC, working with EU Disinfo Lab to, quote, track and suppress pro-Russian counts critical to NATO expansion. They funded groups like the CODA Story, which works with big tech to flag and suppress alternative views on U.S. foreign policy. They were instrumental in an attempted street coup in Venezuela in 2002. They were involved in Haiti. Remember when we talked about the bulldozer releasing all those people from jail? So they went on to go overthrow. Well, they were involved in the media influence strategy against Aristide at that time, who was the current president of Haiti before the overthrow. So to get you a sense, this is their impact. And in Russia, they played a critical role in Russiagate, feeding intelligence to media outlets and IRI-funded think tanks. IRI created the Alliance for Securing Democracy, ASD, and the Hamilton 68 dashboard. So what that was, and this was all exposed by Matt Taibbi, Hamilton 68 data set revealed that it wasn't actually tracking Russian bots, but rather mostly ordinary Americans who are critical of U.S. foreign policy in Russia.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah. So, and then, you know, that's, they created these things to then coordinate with, you know, tech companies to censor on Russia.
All this is so confusing because there's like 25 different names involved,
yeah,
like different orgs involved in this. And I mean, obviously that is an intentional part of the obfuscation strategy, sort of stratify responsibility. If somebody gets called out for doing something nefarious, that one goes away, but it's just replaced by one with a different name. Like, this is part of kind of the shell game of this, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's also very large, very well funded, right? You got billions of dollars moving around here for lots of different aims and efforts with enormous constituencies, right? You're talking about in Ukraine, for example, is the Ukrainian natural gas play, which we've covered before, so I won't dive into. But in the Ukrainian natural gas play, there's an effort to isolate Russia. And what you need to do that is you need to establish a whole lot of things, like a whole branch of things behind underneath that to undergird and amplify all of the narratives you want, so that the public largely recognize and see things from your point of view.
Right.
Because what you're dealing with here are democracies. You're dealing with how the UK interprets what's going on there. Germany, France, the United States. How do you get the right message to those people out of Ukraine? Well, you basically make it so that, what is it, 8 out of 9 major organizations in Russia were funded by USAID or one of these groups?
You mean Ukraine?
It was 9 out of 10.
9 out of 10.
In Ukraine.
In Ukraine, Russia. Yeah.
So... yeah. So and then
you've got USAID funding going to BBC and Politico, obviously, and the New York Times. And so like all of these orgs, these media orgs, which are supposedly independent, are getting money from the same organization that's putting together the propaganda in the country and disseminating it.
That's right. That's the way to think about it. So the last one is the National Democratic Institute. Oh, what's up, Kyle?
No, continue on, because I was going to move on to a different organization, like another set.
In 83, also founded by Madeleine Albright.
Which one is this?
This is the National Democratic Institute.
NDI. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is the progressive wing, you know, sort of the equivalent to the IRI.
Maybe a slightly more accurate language, the neoliberal.
Neoliberal,
right. Sure. Madeleine Albright was the attorney general for Bill Clinton.
Okay.
She founded...
Secretary of State.
You're right, Secretary of State. I don't know.
Was she?
Attorney General.
She's the one that said the million kids dying was worth it.
Yeah.
In Iraq.
Half a million, Kyle. Could use accurate.
Or half a million, sorry.
How dare you?
Yeah, that's what we remember.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Her for.
I overinflated the tragic number.
Still pretty bad.
I'm sure she would have said the same about a million.
Yeah, I'm sure she would have said the same about a million, yeah. Remember, we can't hear you, Bennett.
You guys can.
Oh.
We can.
It's just not
Kyle. The audience can. Kyle can.
Kyle cannot.
They're strengthening civil society, election monitoring, and governance training. That's what their supposed mission is. So they worked with Meta, Facebook directly on election integrity measures, removing pro-populist and anti-globalist content. They funded First Draft News, which partnered with Google and Twitter to label alternative news sources as information.
First
misinformation.
Draft. That sounds like a bad one.
Yeah, right. So they directly financed the Poynter Institute.
What
the
is
Poynter
that?
Institute?
No.
They're a parent company of PolitiFact.
Oh, fact checkers.
Yeah.
Interesting.
That was a big theme that I found, is a lot of these fact checking organizations and these like NewsGuard and things like that. They may all be subject to scrutiny under this, because there is a trail of federal funding that goes towards all these organizations. I even have a list here. Here's just a list from Grok, so take this with a grain of salt, but here's some domestic organizations that do receive federal funding that could be classified as NGOs who could be subject to audit by the ACLU.
Whoa.
Planned Parenthood.
Whoa.
Southern Poverty Law Center.
Definitely.
Acorn.
Yes. I haven't heard that.
MoveOn.org. Yeah. MoveOn.org.
Oh.
National Council of La Raza. That one is less familiar to me. That's Hispanic advocacy.
Yeah, that's a radical Hispanic advocacy group. Like, very leftist.
Human Rights Campaign, Greenpeace USA, Sierra Club, and the Center of American Progress.
Whoa.
These are all domestic organizations who could be subject for scrutiny under this.
That's like a who's crazy. Who.
Yeah, you don't see the same on the right. Like, I don't see the Manhattan Institute coming up for direct funding from IRI.
Interesting.
Yeah, like the Cato Institute isn't receiving federal funded. Crazy.
Yeah. So a couple of like the impacts globally. So yeah, NDI was directly involved in the Arab Spring in training and support for journalists and underground protesters. There's some suggestion that they were actually funding protests and the protesters in the streets. So that resulted in Egypt, Yemen, all over the place. But you know that whole movement. We at the time was largely reported as an organic ground on the ground thing, but this is part of the whole of society model was implemented in Egypt in these places, as this is the first draft of what the Pentagon called Diplomacy 2.0. So they also were involved in China. So after 1997, there is an agreement between the British and the Chinese in order to move Hong Kong into Chinese ownership, right? At that time, in the early 2000s, NDI began funding pro-democracy groups, in fact, in directly investing in political parties in Hong Kong. By 2014, you had the Umbrella Movement. I don't know if you remember that. Mm-hmm. They provided training and activists to people on the Umbrella Movement. By 2019, there's the anti-extradition law protests. NDI groups supported large-scale protests on the ground for that. And then in response to that, China cracked down and implemented a national security law in 2020 that basically, you know, criminalized working with these kind of foreign organizations and banned them in 2021. So it's interesting. I mean, this might have happened in China regardless. It's hard to know with the Chinese Communist Party. But this is definitely a situation in which, from the very beginning, they were on the ground trying to prevent China from actually being able to control Hong Kong directly using these pro-democracy groups in the on behalf of the State Department. Mm-hmm. And that's an important thing to think here is just, it is not money just going just for the goodness of it, right? Just because we love democracy. These are goals of the State Department against foreign adversaries that we are investing in.
Right.
That then look at us as like, why are you investing in this thing? A great one, Belarus. So NED invested in Belarus right before, in an attempted coup in Belarus, right before, in an election cycle, trying to get a pro-Western person in Belarus. That's just before. And Belarus is a key ally of Russia right before Russia invades Ukraine, right? It is one of the straws that break that camel's back in U.S.-Russian relations where they're like, you're going to try to fund an overthrow of a friendly government here after Maidan in 2014. And then you have the current, you know, civil war going on in Ukraine where they're bombing Russian-speaking towns and all this kind of stuff happening. On top of that, you're going to fund an overthrow of Belarus, our closest ally. Hell no, you know, and that's part of this like drift and kind of self-licking ice cream cone component to the military industrial complex and the security state that we don't see, but then end up having enormous like seen consequences.
Yeah.
Yeah, because we can easily deny that. We just say, oh, we just funded, you know, fact checkers in Belarus. So we didn't pick a side. You know, but the Russians see us investing in media in their country. That's why we're banned in Russia.
Yeah. Well, and apart from just the sort of, Diplomacy 2.0, you called it, or they call it?
Yeah.
I mean, there are obviously also like a lot of kinetic, you know, more military driven operations that are done that seem to, I don't know, maybe they're obviously falling in line with this, right? They kind of go hand in hand. And I just saw yesterday, I think that Hegseth supports auditing the Pentagon as right, well, which right. Obviously, as we know, we've talked about many times, the Pentagon's failed like every audit that they've ever had. Mm-hmm. So that should be pretty interesting to see. How do you guys feel about that?
I actually have a clip of him talking about it. If we want to pull it, it's like 30 seconds.
Let's check it out.
That includes a Pentagon audit, which to the Marines out there, y'all got to figure it out. And we appreciate that. Lean and mean. We are going to focus heavily to ensure that at a bare minimum, by the end of 4 years, the Pentagon passes a clean audit. The American taxpayers deserve that. They deserve to know where their $850 billion go, how it's spent, and make sure it's spent wisely. It used to be that if you called for an audit, somehow you were undermining the department. I believe the exact opposite. I believe we are accountable for every dollar we spend. And every dollar of waste we find or redundancy is a dollar we can invest somewhere else, as President Trump has committed directly to rebuilding our nation's military.
Yeah, so as you can see, the spirit of DOGE is kind of hitting all of these different agencies, especially with these cabinet picks. we're seeing a massive want to actually clean these things up with something like we haven't seen in decades, right?
Yeah. No, it's revolutionary, it feels like, to me.
Yeah, it's interesting because the Republicans have always had like two sides to them, and Trump always kind of represented in the popular mind more of the national greatness side, which typically means more spending and not really caring about where the dollars are going. Meanwhile, you had the more Reagan impulse, which just cut the size and scope of government. That's a good in and of itself. And we've seen the latter fail so systemically, but it's under Trump that we actually get a little bit of that, right? Might actually get the Department of Education, might actually get an actual Pentagon audit, these sorts of things. So it's a unique moment, man. This is crazy energy.
Well, and it's interesting. I saw another tweet that's like, you know, this might be the first time in history. It is the first time in history that a quote unquote fascist is reducing the size and scope of government. And I mean, it is. It's like, wow, okay. Yeah, that claim doesn't really work anymore in this paradigm.
Well, yeah, let's move on to a little bit more of a continuation on the USAID stuff that's been going on, because that has been really what's dominated this week. I know you guys covered without me kind of the beginnings of some of the USAID conversation, but we have some of the opposition is laying out their critiques of Elon Musk and the dismantling of USAID that's coming from Doge. Yeah. We have Bernie Sanders here saying, Elon Musk, the richest man on earth, is dismantling USAID, which feeds the poorest children on earth. This is oligarchy at its most. Musk's actions are not only immoral and unconstitutional, they're counterproductive to our standing in the world.
Mm. Yeah, that's all it does. It just feeds kids.
Sure. Just feeds kids. It's aid.
Yeah.
It's US aid, it's in
the name.
Right?
It feeds the workers. In the name. It feeds the workers. So I don't know why I'm doing the Trump. I just,
Yeah, Bernie. Well, it is interesting to what degree the Democrats are focusing on Elon as the bad guy, because they know Trump is popular. So they're focusing on Elon and trying to gin up like a new Gilded Age narrative, even as they're all millionaires who were highly funded by billionaires and had very wealthy people in these roles in the previously. They just didn't care about what the money was going.
Well, so. And I think they're probably all concerned that we're going to find out that, you know, in some way they're getting money from these operations.
Yeah, that the Southern Poverty Law Center has been funded by the U.S. government the whole time would be enormous. That would be huge.
And like, I mean, the Clinton Foundation gets a ton of money from this stuff too, we're finding out. I mean, it's pervasive. And the fear, I think, on this side is obviously that all of this is going to come to light, and their legitimacy and their claims to this altruistic progressive worldview are going to be completely shattered, and their ability to have any credibility and to govern going forward is going to be damaged like irreparably.
Well, it really brings the question, I've seen some really great tweets about this, to what degree our impressions of the balance of power was an artificially generated government creation as opposed to organic, right? We always kind of assume that the left just has lots of money. They just have really committed donors who really embrace their vision. Well, and it's actually been an unfair fight this whole time. That's why in C3 and C4 spending, the left dominates on a massive scale. They spend many more billions of dollars annually on their nonprofit foundations than the right does.
Because they're getting them from the government?
Maybe because they've been getting them from USAID this whole time. That's crazy.
That is crazy.
That reveals so much of the grift in the current moment. At least that led us up to here.
Well, and that's the thing too, is so much of the lefty critique on this is they're really focusing on the aid aspect of USAID, and aid is not what the organization is. Like, the AID stands for Agency for International Development. And what that actually like functionally means is it's the cultivation of assets through these organizations in foreign countries and domestically right now. It's not like this feel good. Oh, we're just spreading goodness around the world. We're just doing human aid for the people in need. Like, that's not what the organization is set out to do. Now, there's pieces of it that kind of functionally do that, but that's not it, you know. And there's actually a curious framing. I saw Mike Benz tweet this, where he was saying he put out a tweet is like, you know, it's interesting how no foreign leaders, like there's no foreign heads of state out there right now that are actually tweeting their that they're really sad that USAID is being suspended.
Yeah.
And you would think that if they're receiving all this dough coming in from the United States, that the foreign leaders would actually be like really upset about this right now.
Well,
but maybe secretly those foreign leaders are a little bit like, they understand that this is how the United States projects its soft power in our countries and foments revolutions in our countries.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, we talked earlier about how they're funding opposition groups. So obviously those leaders are probably like, good, finally, I won't have this like astroturfed opposition trying to overthrow me when I do something that's counter to U.S. interests.
Yeah, assuming. I don't think that actually goes away. I think it just gets repurposed.
Yeah. There would be a lot of
that. Let's not be too...
That's a black pill if I've ever heard
of. Let's not be too indulgent. I don't think Trump's an interventionist. I don't think Pete Hegseth is. I don't think any of these people are. Marco Rubio? Come on.
I mean, clearly...
But we can clean these things up and make them much more efficient and just make them far less corrupt. Yes. But like you said, like the deep state is going to... You know, the deep state is still smart. It's not like... It's not going to like refinangle things along the way and try to like repurpose tools that it has, right?
At a minimum, a major setback in the short run. And that's a good thing. Mm-hmm. It's the first setback we've had since the 1970s. So pretty good. Pretty good.
Setback for the bad guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes.
Yeah. So let's see what.
Yeah, actually, speaking of Marco Rubio, actually, just because you brought him on, I'm going to skip to this momentarily for it, Dave. Okay. I actually have here Senator Marco Rubio actually has publicly stated that he thinks that USAID staffers only need to be 294 out of 14,000.
That's a lot of money.
Which could lead to maybe the biggest mass firing we've ever seen.
That's amazing. I mean, that's outdoing Elon.
If that's actually what we see it downsized to, that would be wild.
A huge win.
I would love to know what those 294 people are going to continue doing and what the rest of them were doing prior to this.
Writing checks. People are flagging things on Facebook, I assume.
You know, it's even worth mentioning, too, is with our focus, this is a bit of a drift from the USAID, but it's maybe a little bit more of a commentary on Rubio. With our focus moving towards much more of an America sphere, like Central and North America in our foreign policy, and us taking a focus on this, it might actually make Marco Rubio a fairly good candidate on the Secretary of State level. Like, I was just watching some of the stuff he was doing down in El Salvador and his meeting with Bukele and the conversations that were arising from that. And it's just like, you have a Spanish speaker kind of like relates to that crowd with his Cuban heritage, right? If the Trump administration is taking a focus on Central America in such a way, it actually kind of gives some logic to the Rubio Secretary of State pick. Right?
It's also been interesting. I saw Rubio actually claim, you know, in a non-dogmatic way that we are entering a multipolar world. Like he said, that's a fact.
Yeah.
That's a reality. And oftentimes people from his ilk in the Senate have been very in denial about that and not very realist about it. And I saw some really interesting realist perspectives from him on that, which was very heartening in the sense that at least he's engaging with reality.
Yeah, that's been since the Secretary of State pick for Rubio. I've been feeling that way too, where like we've all been kind of like, he might be the worst pick that Trump's made, but like there's a little bit of like cautious optimism that I'm starting to feel around the Rubio pick now. And I'm open to continuing to watch that further develop. Let's get back to some of the other liberal freakouts on this right now. We have AOC, and there's been some developments around AOC around here, but she has some very choice words for Elon Musk.
This dude is probably one of the most unintelligent billionaires I have ever met.
True.
Or seen or witnessed. which, you know, you can probably even glean that from watching these people on TV. Anyways, all that is to say is that they don't do their homework. Clearly, like, they're putting 19-year-olds in at the Treasury. This dude is not smart. And the danger in not in the lack of intelligence and the lack of expertise that Elon has. I mean, this guy is one of the most morally vacant, but also just least knowledgeable about these systems that.
Speak your truth, Queen.
I was hoping she'd get something out there.
It's funny to hear. I know Kyle can't hear me, but it's funny to hear the person who at the time was the youngest member of Congress ever elected. Yeah. Criticize him for using people who are too young.
Yeah. Well, it's classic. Trying to close the door behind you. You know, you're saying, oh man, I might get elected young, but that's okay. It's these other people. I mean, it's such a partisan bullshittery.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of interesting because with her comments going towards the USAID stuff, there's been some sleuthing that's been going on the internet around AOC and her connections to USAID. Some of it basically being that her political come up started when she was in college due to USAID. She was involved in some of the ongoings when she was a student in college during a study abroad program in her political science, learnings in Niger while the Civil War was going on, and partially backed and funded by USAID. It's kind of an interesting little snippet that's been coming up with all of the internet sleuthing that's been going on.
I wonder
on.
How many of these are going to be uncovered as we go.
Yeah, it's also part of a Mike Benz thing where he also has, this is part of a quote tweet thread showing that Liz Cheney spawned out of USAID.
Oh, yeah. She worked for USAID.
Don't say.
Yeah.
It's crazy how this works.
And it's interesting how you kind of use them as training grounds for finding talent. In that case, you know, and so I think a lot of this, what's one most interesting thing for me is this was all public knowledge in the sense that the data was out there. You know, the websites that we're using now to make these connections existed then. It's just that it wasn't mainstream to talk about it. We didn't have the highlight of the administration saying there are problems here and therefore getting the echo chamber going that suggests that this is important news. Even as, you know, Liz Cheney being connected to USAID is well known prior, even as a lot of these organizations were already exposed on opensecrets.org and other websites for receiving these funds.
I will actually say in regards to what you were saying that this is all public knowledge. I don't have it in the notes here. I could actually pull it. I know I put something here. So there was actually a comment made by Mark Cuban here saying that, wait, has DOGE just been pulling numbers from usaspending.gov, then releasing them as if they've just discovered this? You fooled me, Elon Musk. Like, he's kind of doing this, like, you know, DOGE isn't actually being as successful as he wants to. And there was a comment here from a guy who actually made the tool, commenting on just going to the USA Spending website to be able to actually search for keywords was basically functionally impossible before this. And they developed a whole system for being able to reverse index and being able to actually look these things up and actually be able to search all of this stuff.
Oh, wow.
It was basically impossible. Like, it was functionally impossible before now.
Interesting. And that was done from DOGE or was done by somebody else?
This Data Republican guy, who I believe has some sort of connections to DOGE, he has a website and they're using his tool as part of this.
Yeah,
right,
DataRepublican.com. I've seen that a lot. So that's interesting. Yeah. And making deeper connections than just one leap. That's the other important component of this. Like, you're seeing USAID to NED to IRI to this group, right?
Yeah. And I mean, the leveraging of technology in doing this has been really interesting to see that there's, like, I don't know, some sort of fractal technology that's like mapping all the associations and connections between all these orgs and where the money's flowing and like actually presenting it and visualizing it for average people in a way that's like very clear. Whereas before, I mean, you would need like a data forensics degree to figure out and trace, you know, all these different relationships and where all the money was going prior to this current era. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
Love to see
this. It's such an awesome development, right?
It's great.
People care about spending again. It's so awesome.
It's been so great. Like, I've referred to like every morning being Christmas morning lately because I just don't know what I'm going to wake up to see on X. I'm like, what do we got today?
Yeah,
it's
exactly.
It's wild.
Yeah,
it is wild because we basically have this Elon Musk put together a team of six autists to just save the world, right? like here's our heroes.
I like how we use that like it's like a qualifier. Like, we trust these guys now just
because they're autists,
because they're socially awkward computer nerds.
It was crazy because like so many people have been digging into these people. Like, one of these guys, apparently he won like $300,000 in college for deciphering some ancient Greek scrolls.
Yeah, it was the Luke Ferreter guy. He's got the scrolls in the background there. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very cool.
He developed some sort of algorithm that could, an AI algorithm, I guess, that could basically determine what the characters were on the pages of the Dead Sea Scrolls, even though they had been burned.
Hmm. and make better guesses on what they could be.
I mean, like, to make really, yeah, really, like, determine pretty That's conclusively awesome. What they say.
That's so cool.
Which is wild.
Yeah, yeah. Amazing stuff.
Yeah, well, but the media has been doing their media hit job stuff. They've been coming after Mike Benz, who's been kind of the guy that's really popularized the USAID stuff. You know, we've talked about him a lot on the podcast. We reference him quite a bit in this regard. And then they found out that one of the Doge employees, he had racist comments as a teenager under a pseudonym called Harry Balls or Big Balls. Big Balls, right?
Okay, so how racist are we talking about here? What are we talking about?
It was things like... Well, that's the thing. It's like, teenage kid, are we going to hold him responsible for things he said two years ago as a teenager or however long it was?
Balls.
as Big Balls online in like a Reddit thread or whatever. But there were comments, there was disparaging comments towards Indians. There was disparaging comments, like basically saying, why don't we just level both Israel and Gaza? Like,
hey, that's like, mainstream discourse right now. I don't know what you're talking about. Have you ever seen Candazonans? No, I'm kidding.
There were some other things I saw, like interpretations of what he had said that were more like,
yeah, you know,
immigration policy should benefit Americans.
Yeah.
Was
right.
Sort of like the
corporate speak of what he was trolling on.
And like, you know, that he was, you know, that he wanted to marry someone of his same ethnicity.
Which
is like so overtly racist. Like, how can you say that?
He did say, just for the record, I was racist before it was cool.
Well, okay, so the big question here is trolling bad? Like, should you say things you don't actually believe or that you believe on the internet
under a pseudonym
to get the lulls? Is that wrong?
But it's literally people like talking lulls. Shit.
Should it ruin talking
that you might not necessarily believe.
Yeah, right.
And this is actually J.D. Vance came out and he made a comment on it. He said, let me start with Elon Musk put a poll, bring back Doge staffer who made inappropriate statements via a now deleted pseudonym. And it was 78% voted in favor of bringing him back.
Quarter million? That's a huge vote.
385,000.
Oh, man, that's crazy. Wow. That's a huge sample set.
So, yeah. And then J.D. Vance said, here's my view. I obviously disagree with some of his posts, but I don't think stupid social media activity should ruin a kid's life. We shouldn't reward journalists who try to destroy people ever. So I say bring him back. If he's a bad dude or he's a terrible member of the team, fire him,
Kyle,
for that.
If you scroll down.
That seems reasonable.
Oh, I see it just got replaced. Maybe it was on Elon's tweet. But Jeremy Kaufman had a comment that was right at the top, right down there. It says, the Doge staffer said civil rights law should be repealed. Okay. Immigration policy should improve the quality of people in a country, and he prefers to marry someone of his own ethnicity. So that was the comment that I was referring to.
Oh, I see. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's like, and he's just, you know, making it into appropriate speech as opposed to internet lull speech.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Which is another one of those things is like, as the generations change, are we going to see a difference in this, or are corporate journalists going to continue with their puritanical prosecution of anybody who says edgy things on the internet?
I mean, if they're funded by the incentive structure where USAID is paying the New York Times to carry water for a given narrative, then yes. But if we eliminate that and we change the incentive structure to actually be something that's appealing to the, you know, the majority of the public.
Yeah.
In a way that is actually like somewhat honest and not driven by government propaganda, then we might see a change there.
Well, that's what's interesting here is one of the journalists who docs the Doge employees actually has intelligence community ties.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. I got the tweet there, Kyle, if you want to bring it up.
Yep. I already have it up here.
We'll blow it up. I can't actually read it, but.
I got you. If we want to click in, I can read the actual comment, but. Yeah, so that says, so Communications and Outreach USAID Quality Reading Project. And then below that, we've got U.S. Department of State Executive Office Intern. So this is the person that did the doxing.
Yeah.
Prior to that, a Political Military Affairs Section Intern. So plenty of experience in USAID and various other orgs.
Yeah, that's one of Mike Benz's breakdowns of how it works. So, like, but he's saying that it's incredible that a journal who docs the Doge staffer worked at three of the top four Blobcraft agencies I stress in lectures to do organized political warfare and intelligence work. So that this is the guy. This is the first link is actually from his LinkedIn profile. So the guy who exposed these guys are obviously he's self-interested. The goal here is to shame somebody out of
out of
legitimacy.
Looks like the reporter is Catherine Long.
Oh, sorry, she.
Sam Spade tweets, this is the reporter who doxed and got Marco Elez fired. Note her background. Yeah, reporter, Wall Street Journal. If you could go back, I'll read a couple of those.
Yeah.
Wall Street Journal. We got Business Insider, National Desk correspondent. We've got Business Reporter at the Seattle Times, a very conservative publication.
Associate producer at the New York Times, who we now know was getting USAID funding.
Researcher at Vox Media and the Fulbright, researcher at the Fulbright program. I don't know what that is. Something in Tajikistan.
And then it goes into the U.S. State Department 7 months ago.
How old are you generally when you're an intern?
There's a nice career path there.
That's a good question. Bennett Bennett asks Kyle, how old are you generally when you're an intern? I suppose it depends.
Yeah. Interesting.
There was also an interesting framing from a tweet that I had from Mike Benz here too, that they can't make up their mind on which basis to defend USAID. When they try to defend it and on how much good it does, they run into how it's all gone wrong. When they try to defend it as US soft power projects being cleverly designed as aid, it kind of puts the lie to it being aid. Like they're in this catch-22 argument right now where everybody's just seeing through it in this moment.
Well, and I think
it's like,
I think that's the benefit too of the pace at which this is all happening. They don't have time and now maybe also the resources to coordinate a narrative and stick to it. Mm-hmm. So they're like, you know, the various heads of this Hydra can't really talk to each other in the same way that they used to. And so they're really struggling to put forward something that's cohesive. Mm-hmm.
Well, it's kind of interesting, too, because now we're seeing a bill being drafted in Congress. Thomas Massie tweeted out that he's a co-sponsor on it here. But there's a bill coming in to just straight up abolish USAID.
Sick.
And like, will that actually get through? I don't know. It probably won't. Will we see massive downsizing of some sort? Maybe like what Rubio was saying. Will we get down to the 200 and however many employees? Probably not that far. But like, can we get it down quite a bit? I could see it.
The important thing to understand here is that USAID was created by an executive order. Now, the enabling language for the executive order was that we are going to do more international aid. It didn't say you have to do USAID. So, therefore, what the president can do is, with an executive order, abolish the organization and restructure it into a new organization, right? His command from Congress is to do aid. It isn't to do USAID at these funding levels for these projects. So that's all left up to the executive to decide. So a restructuring is what we'll probably see. Unfortunately, without 60 votes in the Senate, I don't think they're going to be able to get any bills through.
Is the president required by the legislative component of that enabling language to give a certain amount of aid?
No.
It's just aid.
Well, that would be an appropriations requirement. And there are different rules on appropriations when it comes to impoundment and other rules that the president has and discretions that the president has and either spend money or not spend money. And it depends on the program and it depends on the title that it's under.
Okay, so he doesn't have to spend, say, $50 billion like USAID is currently spending. He could spend $50 million.
Right, which is also be an appropriations thing. If he's doing it right, what he should do is you should go to Congress with a budget to then say, this is how much I've found and waste here, and they actually cut the budget for it. And then he doesn't have to worry about the impoundment question.
Interesting.
Right. And if they pass that budget, it doesn't require the 60 votes. He can pass it just with Republican votes.
Okay.
If the Republicans have the balls, the big balls, to do it or not. Right. That's the question. Because they typically don't. Right. In the past, they've been very, you know, I don't know. It's national security.
It's a nice callback.
That was a nice callback.
Yeah.
that's why Elon had to bring people in from the outside. He had to bring the big balls in.
That's right.
Let's get into some examples of some of the things that were being funded here, because I think a lot of people have probably seen there's a lot of like goofy projects where it's like, oh, here's $10 million to teach woke ideology in Pakistan. And here's like $8 million to do this or that, or like to promote trans issues in, you know, some other third world country. I do have a thing here, which I think is probably of concern here, that we have WikiLeaks said that USAID was funding over 6,200 journalists across 707 media outlets and 279 media NGOs, including 9 out of 10 media outlets in Ukraine.
Wow. USAID was funding over 6,200 journalists across over 700 media outlets and 279, quote, media NGOs, including 9 out of 10 in Ukraine. That's crazy.
Yeah. That is just so what they're talking about there is international. They're not talking about the New York Times.
Yeah.
But we do have substantial reports on the New York Times, BBC, Politico, places like that, getting substantial subscription funding from employees at USAID. Is that what I'm reading or understanding?
Well, so yeah, so here we have, here I have here coming from the BBC here. We have, so this is coming from BBC Media Action, which is their like sidearm that is used for like charity efforts and training journalists. That seems to be the big function that they have here. But they put out a statement saying a free press is essential to freedom and democracy, and 75% of countries around the world do not have a free press. BBC Media Action supports local media around the world to deliver trusted information to people most in need. Like many international development organizations, there's the word international development organization. That's kind of the whole thing. BBC Media Action has been affected by the temporary pause in U.S. government funding, which amounts to about 8% of our income.
Wow.
8%.
Wow.
We're doing everything we can to minimize the impact on our partners and the people we serve. As the BBC's international charity, we are completely separate from BBC News and wholly reliant on our donors and supporters to carry out our work.
Right.
Wholly dependent upon the U.S. government to carry out our work.
And that was the thing. That was the thing here was I saw some charts here on so the BBC Media Action, and this is their top 10 donors. So you see there, USAID is highlighted in there, right? So we're a major player in that out of all this. I think we're the second biggest.
Looks like it, yep.
Is coming here. But then I did a little bit of digging into some of these other organizations. We have the Swedish International Development Corporation Agency. We have the Swiss Agency for Development. We have the Global Affairs Canada. You know, like these organizations are the same, like they are the USAID of these other countries.
Are they also getting money from USAID?
I don't know. I barely heard that, Bennett, but I don't know if that's the case. But like, so you can see that this is a model that is used by all of these different countries for coming in and funding these organizations, right?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I mean, obviously, I mean, if the structure of these other international orgs, you know, Global Affairs Canada or the Swiss Agency for Development or whatever, are that they're getting substantial amounts of taxpayer funds from their countries, then you would think this is all just state-sponsored media propaganda.
That's what I looked into was I looked in to see if these organizations are essentially the equivalent of those countries' USAID programs, and they are. Like, they're essentially the same function. They serve the same purpose in all of those countries.
Yeah, and one of the things to be that you can be overly naive about is to say, oh, these are separated funds from their journalism. But you should note that these sorts of things are influencing on the overall culture of an organization and their interest, right? So look at BBC reporting of the Nord Stream pipeline, right? Mm-hmm. They never, ever treat Seymour or any American involvement with serious, you know, credit. All they do is say, well, Russia obviously blew up their own pipeline, and now these Ukrainians on a dinghy did it.
Yeah.
Right.
Interesting note there. Did you see Seymour Hersh's latest Substack or one of his recent Substacks about the USAID investigation and defunding? He's very, very against it.
Oh.
Very against it.
Who is?
What's Seymour Hersh.
Oh, is he?
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, you should read it. It's wow. I mean, it's a shorter post, it's not a full thing, but I would have expected, especially given that context, that he would feel very differently.
Yeah. Well, I don't know. But the interesting, so it's overly naive. I'm just saying that to say it's overly naive to suggest that BBC, they're what is functionally, as I read this, Kyle, and correct me if I'm wrong, this looks like a CIC thing, right? This is funding journalists overseas in order to get them another pathway to say we're legitimate, we get BBC funding, we must be, you know, neutral and unbiased and carry the cloud of BBC when they're reporting in Ukraine or reporting in Belarus or reporting in, you know, Serbia or whatever about NATO's goals and these things. They're going to be influenced by these funding, that is going to carry the things that are in the interest of Sweden and Finland and these other areas that are also donating?
What it seems to me is that their media action group here is that they are kind of similar, not exactly, but they have similar strategies as the Aspen Institute. Mm. Which the Aspen Institute is like functionally, they put on these like leadership seminars and all of this nonsense for journalists, where they basically like train the journalists on what the correct talking points are for whatever's going on. So like during the COVID stuff, like the Aspen Institute was essentially training people on how to talk about it.
Before the Biden laptop dropped, they were saying, hey, yeah, if Russia's going to put out a major misinformation campaign in the next election cycle, what do we do about it? How do we cover it? You know, yeah, mm-hmm. We know they did that.
Then other things here, and this just kind of goes into like, is this America first? We have it from my homeland. We have coming in. USAID has been pouring in tons of money into all of the top Canadian universities.
Whoa, that's a.
So we have the University of British Columbia getting about $1 billion.
Right. $1 billion?
Yeah.
That's insane.
Do they charge tuition? What do I?
Well, Canada's colleges are known for being very cheap.
You're welcome, Canada.
Wow.
So there's that.
Wow.
Yeah, but just like University of Saskatchewan, that's the province that I'm from, $469 million.
Nice.
In total across all these universities, it's about $5.5 billion.
I'm asking AI how much the University of British Columbia charge for tuition.
How much does Toronto Metropolitan University get?
Wow, they do $6,000 a year for tuition.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus Christ.
$6,000 a year?
Yeah. Per year, depending on the program.
You know, it's actually kind of funny because I was listening. I remember a couple weeks ago, Tucker Carlson had Chamath Palihapitiya on, and they were talking, and Chamath was talking about how he wouldn't have been able to have his success if he didn't go to a Canadian university because it was so much cheaper. And it's just kind of funny that they had that conversation.
Yeah, you didn't realize you got USAID funds the whole time.
Jeez. Yeah. My God. That's just nuts.
Yeah, so you think about like we at the exact same time, the U.S. government, the U.S. polity is having a major discussion about student loan forgiveness and how we subsidize colleges with all the Pell Grants and all these things. We do this for our students. We require them to take a grant or a subsidized loan, but then we give the University of British Columbia $1 billion. I'm not saying I support college loan forgiveness.
Burn it to the ground.
Think of the insanity of that.
Burn it to the ground.
Well, when you think about it, it's sort of like, you know, a big theme in the America First stuff is like we're giving all this money to Ukraine, but we can't fund our own roads. But now it's even like even more direct than that. It's like we're giving money to Canadian universities, but our tuition keeps going up. Right?
Not to college students in the United States, which would be a better system.
Then here's another one that might get people's
Before we go on, Kyle, I'm sorry. I think this is a perfect example of why Canada should become the 51st state. We're already funding it.
Doesn't that kind of go into Trump's argument? Is like how much money we're giving to Canada? That's been like a very big thing. Is like we're giving all this money to Canada, and Canada's screwing us over, not
this
giving us anything.
Bolsters the case.
Well, there was a report last month about Canadian universities involved in a scheme to basically import people from Asia, South Asia, specifically to Canada, and then they would come down through the northern border.
Illegally?
Yeah.
Oh, those motherfuckers.
Yeah. So like that is a part of this. Like immigration's built into this, and we are funding these universities that are doing that very thing. So think about that for a minute, how insane that is.
Well, and remember, there's been so much drama over the last several years in Ontario and also at the University of Waterloo. Mm. Which are on this list. Jordan Peterson from Ontario, right?
$1 billion.
Or no, he's sorry. I think he's from the University of Toronto.
Yeah, University of Toronto. That's right.
800.
Is that what he is?
Governing Council of the University of Toronto. $800 million.
Second largest. Yeah. Whew. $800 million.
And then you guys remember that story? I can't remember her name. It was like Lindsay something. That had a bunch of drama because she was a teacher's aide and she used the Jordan Peterson clip.
Oh yeah.
I believe that was at the University of Waterloo, which I believe is supposed to be like the top university in Canada and one of the top universities in the in North America, actually. Right.
So it's this thing, like they're not spending their own money on their colleges, but they can stand upon like the moral superiority of how great and woke they are, as they don't have to pay for it, as we're paying for it. Your tax dollars are paying for this. Just keep that in mind. Of $5 billion to Canadian universities.
I'm fucking furious. I am so fucking mad.
Yeah, man. I paid off my college loans. I worked hard on that.
This, but dude, just him over there.
This is all I can take today. End the episode now before I lose it.
Well, Joe, I just know this next one is going to make you lose your mind even more.
Bring it on.
Because this is much more even up your alley. So here's the fiscal year of 2024 and government contracts. And you might be interested to see Pfizer is the number two in government contracts from USAID last year. And we are looking at $4.1 billion.
Cool.
I can't.
Joe, did I lose you guys?
I can't do it. I'm sorry. I can't fucking do it.
Oh, yikes. Yeah.
Burn it to the ground.
What are they paying Pfizer for?
Got to be research and development.
I have no idea.
For what new vaccines.
Probably
vaccines?
Moving drugs around. Is that right?
What
vaccinating public employees maybe on our dime? What are we doing with Pfizer?
Well, I mean, everybody got vaccinated on taxpayer dime.
Yeah, that could be a lot of this, but this is 2024. Are they still doing that? On the scale of $4 billion.
Got to get your booster.
Got to get your booster, folks. Don't forget.
who's Jon Snow Incorporated?
So Jon Snow is a famous person in epidemiology.
The king of the North.
Thank you, Ben.
Wrong spelling, loser. I read the books. I know.
I don't have it pulled up.
It's got an H in it. If it has H in it, it's epidemiology. If it's an O in it, then he's the forgotten king or whatever it is. King of the North. Jon Snow was a famous epidemiologist from Britain. Who discovered, basically water supply was one of the key problems in the spread of disease.
Mm.
Yeah. Anyways, so I imagine that's a public health ordinance. The other one, Chemonix International, there's some really interesting stuff out there on it. We probably won't dig into it right now, but it is, I mean, it's huge. They get tons of money. They're on here multiple times, and they're the top.
Yeah, they're actually 1, 3, and 5 for the top in 2024.
The top one is $6 billion, and most of that's international drugs for Africa, from what I understand, a lot of it being AIDS medication.
Is there a connection to Bill Gates here?
Oh,
with Chemonix International?
Not that I'm aware of, but maybe.
Let me grok it.
Yeah, they're for profit. They're incorporated, so they're for profit, I assume. But yeah, there was some interesting studies on that. Apparently, they're like late on their deliveries to these AIDS drugs, like 94% of the time.
Shocking.
Things like that. It was at minimum not very well run. At maximum, a huge grift.
Okay, so Chemonix International, we've got some connections. I'm not seeing anything directly funding related, but Garen Hansen, who worked at Chemonix International, was previously a strategy program officer for the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. In his role, he managed a significant portfolio of investments related to agriculture and food security.
Hmm.
There's some project collaboration that has gone on and broader connections. While not a direct association, Chemonix being one of the largest recipients of U.S. aid contracts, and given that the Gates Foundation also supports various international development projects, there's an indirect linkage through shared objectives and sometimes overlapping project areas. So maybe not direct funding relationships, but certainly collaborating on projects. Very interesting and very troubling as well.
Yeah. So I asked another AI about Pfizer and what they're spending money on for USAID funds. Let's see here. Global vaccination efforts still. Yeah.
We haven't moved past that.
Yeah, apparently not.
That's wild.
Yeah.
Well, we just got to get RFK confirmed.
Yeah. Stop that.
Although, did you see the list of things that Bill Cassidy made him agree to in order to get his vote?
No, I didn't.
Oh my God. It was extensive.
Wow. What were the highlights?
Oh, I'll pull it up because it's too long to list.
Man.
It was a troubling long list. It made me wonder even like if RFK could be effectual.
You just stab him in the back.
Okay, so. Good. Well, I mean, I don't know. RFK seeming like a pretty stand-up guy. I wonder if that would be something.
Nah,
he would
Doug,
do.
It's politics.
Okay, so Cassidy I was just going to read a couple of these real quick. Cassidy received assurances that Kennedy would not dismantle the nation's vaccine safety systems or take down government vaccine guidance.
Whoa.
Kennedy agreed to maintain the CDC's Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices and to protect vaccines, which I think is probably fine. I mean, like, RFK is not anti-vaccine, contrary to what the media says. Regular collaboration. Kennedy committed to having a, quote, unprecedentedly close relationship with Cassidy, if confirmed, including meeting and speaking multiple times a month. Kennedy also agreed to appear before the Senate Help Committee, which Cassidy chairs, on a quarterly basis if requested. Input on HHS appointments. So Kennedy promised to let Cassidy have input in filling key roles at HHS, including indicating a cooperative approach. Health policy commitments. There were discussions about working together on issues like combating chronic disease, advocating for pro-life policies under HHS, and supporting innovation in healthcare to reduce costs and improve treatment. That one seems pretty positive. Public health trust. Cassidy mentioned the possibility of Kennedy helping public health agencies re-earn the trust of the American people, particularly in the context of public health measures like vaccination. So the first few are way more troubling than the latter couple, I would say. But definitely a lot of terms in order to get his vote, which I don't know if that's the deciding vote or what, but he certainly seems to think it is.
Interesting. So one more thing on that too. Malaria and tuberculosis were two of the other things that were also funding across Africa and poor countries, as well as nutrition, clean water, and maternal and infant health services.
Yeah. Those seem like legit things.
Those are the cover ones, right? Those are the ones that legitimate, you know, all the other things that they're doing with this on behalf of the State Department.
But all we're doing is trying to stop malaria and tuberculosis.
Right. Well, and if you listen to the administration, they're saying, hey, some of these programs we could keep going, right? But we're going to audit them to make sure that they're indeed doing the things we think they're doing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, obviously, this rabbit hole goes very deep, and we could go on for hours on all this stuff. So let's move on to the next section.
That's it, man.
This will be just maybe the last one. It's just I've seen this going around on Twitter, but it seems to be fake. But a lot of people have probably seen it. As far as I can tell right now, there's been a lot of talk about paying celebrities to support Ukraine. There was numbers being thrown around that Jean-Claude Van Damme got $1.5 million. Ben Stiller got $4 million. Sean Penn got $5 million. Orlando Bloom, $8 million. And Angelina Jolie, $20 million. We had here that Ben Stiller, he tweeted out that this is totally untrue. These are lies coming from Russian media. I completely self-funded my humanitarian trip to Ukraine. There was no funding from USAID and certainly no personal payments.
Personal payments.
I was also seeing there's like fact checking from the Kiev Post on it saying that it was Russian disinformation.
I mean,
worth noting, it's the Kiev Post. But it is one of these things where I didn't see any direct relation personally when I went searching for it. There was something that was worth noting is that Ben Stiller, in his Twitter bio, he is a goodwill ambassador for the UNHCR, which is one of the organizations under the UN that is under the scrutiny of this executive order. It is worth noting that, too.
So when we see a payment to you, to some like anonymous LLC from the UNHCR for $4 million, we're not going to assume that that was Ben Stiller's payment to go over there and shake hands and take pictures.
I think it's a worthwhile question that every one of these celebrities went over to Ukraine and had their meeting and photo op with Zelensky. And we have all of these connections with these organizations and with these intel programs with Ukraine. And, you know, there's questions about celebrity asset cultivation that I think is to be raised. Like we covered that in the past of what was it? The NATO organization that that used Taylor Swift as an example, as an asset cultivation at one point. Remember, yep, we talked about that, right? I think that there's reason to be cautious and be thinking about this, but as for now, it looks like that there is no direct link to USAID at this point in time. But I think it's worthy to have some skepticism towards the celebrity endorsements. It's sort of like all these celebrities that allegedly got money on the for the Kamala Harris support during the campaign.
Right.
We had that.
Yeah, so I was looking at the datarepublican.com, looking at UNHCR, and they received Let's see here. Gross receipts is $149 million. But it says taxpayer funds zero, so not sure what that means in this case. So yeah, we'll have to keep tracking. See what it looks like.
Yes.
And very specifically, what that organization is the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees. So it's all about refugees, protecting refugees, helping stateless people that were forcibly displaced. That's who he's a goodwill ambassador for. And that's one of the organizations under scrutiny from this executive order on that first section that we covered with the UN stuff. That they're saying may be infiltrated by terrorist organizations. And it wasn't just Hamas. It was actually, that was the one named in there, but they said that there was multiple US organizations. Maybe. So.
Yeah, well, I'm sure the revelations will keep flowing if our friends at Doge, our friend Big Balls, continue to do their low-hanging work.
Support your local autist.
Support your local autist, and stay tuned to Human Reaction for more updates from all this stuff. We will be covering it as deeply, thoroughly as possible. Man, I'm again just really excited to see all this stuff come to light. It just feels like a very different era in U.S. history where the people actually have visibility into the government. Maybe, I mean, certainly for the first time in my lifetime.
Yes, sir. Totally agree.
That's what I'm loving. Yeah, that's what I love about all of this. People are waking up to things. Like, people are seeing things, like things of conspiracy theory. A lot of the stuff that we're seeing right now was all kind of conspiracy theory about, like, how these organizations operate and kind of the nefarious nature of these goodwill organizations and just kind of like the politics behind it that allows for such corruption and kind of moralizing the emotions of people to allow this racket to keep going. And we're exposing it all right now. We're seeing it all for what it is.
We are. And we will continue to expose it. And in that interest, please do stay tuned. Please smash the like button. Leave us a comment. Let us know what you're looking forward to Doge uncovering next. For David Rand, for Kyle remotely, for Bennett on the buttons, I'm Joe Sheehan. This is Human Reaction, and we will see you in the SCIF, the members only show. If you want to become a member, go to humanreactionpod.com. Thanks. Thanks for tuning in to Human Reaction. Please be sure to like, follow, subscribe, and give us a review on your podcast platform of choice. And if you want to become a member and support the show financially, check out humanreactionpod.com. And remember, dicks out for big balls.
Dicks out for big balls.